Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, former presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. Thank you for tuning in to the Freedom Report podcast. First, a word from our sponsors. As innovators in credit repair, My Credit Dreams helps clarify credit reporting errors. MyCreditDreams.com is fast, friendly, and efficient. No subscription is necessary, and there's a money-back guarantee in the contract. Visit MyCreditDreams.com or call 972-900-7777. Visit MyCreditDreams.com and schedule your free consultation today. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gents. Thanks a lot for listening to this podcast. You know, it's been a terrific journey, 3 years of podcasting with 1 million listeners a month, and it really makes me proud to have you as a loyal listener. Don't forget, you can always subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher if you want to download us on the go. And if you're listening to this on your Facebook live stream, do me a favor and share this in your feed so other people can enjoy the joy of liberty goodness. Today is Monday, April the 24th, and I've got a really interesting topic for you all today, a story to share with you all from one of my favorite economists, a gentleman by the name of Don Boudreau. And if you've never heard of Donald Boudreau, he is a fantastic free market economist that works at George Mason for the Mercatus Institute, I believe. And he was someone that I used to frequently have on my television show Freedom Watch when I was a producer at the Fox Business Network for Judge Napolitano. And so he's written an article a few days ago that was contrasted to a story from The Atlantic about how Americans used to live 100 years ago. The title of the article is "You Are Richer Than John D. Rockefeller." And it was just such a brilliant piece that I felt I had to share it with you, because sometimes we forget just exactly how good we have it in modern society. As bad as it is for people who are not part of the 1%, we certainly do have it much better than the 1% of 100 years ago. So I want to read this story to you, and then let's talk about it when I'm finished. The Atlantic story reveals how Americans lived 100 years ago, Donald Boudreau writes. By the standards of a middle-class American today, that lifestyle was poor, inconvenient, dreary, and dangerous. Only a few years later, in 1924, the 16-year-old son of a sitting U.S. president would die of an infected blister that the boy got on his toe while playing tennis on the White House grounds. So here's a question that I've asked in one form or another on earlier occasions, but that is so probing that I ask it again. What is the minimum amount of money that you would demand in exchange for your going back to live even as John D. Rockefeller lived in 1916? $21.7 million 2016 dollars, which are about $1,000,000 1916 dollars. Would that do it? What about $1 billion 2016 or 1916 dollars? Would this sizable sum of dollars be enough to enable you to purchase a quantity of high-quality 1916 goods and services that would at least make you indifferent between living in 1916 America and living on your current income in 2016 America? Think about it, hard, carefully. If you were a 1916 American billionaire, you could, of course, afford prime real estate. You could afford a home on Fifth Avenue, or one overlooking the Pacific Ocean, or one on your own tropical island somewhere, or all three. But when you traveled from your Manhattan digs to your West Coast palace, it would take a few days. And if you made that trip during the summer months, you'd likely not have air conditioning in your private railroad car. And while you might have air conditioning in your New York home, many of the friends' homes that you visit, as well as restaurants and business offices that you frequent, were not air conditioned. In the winter, many were also poorly heated by today's standards. To travel to Europe took you several days. To get to foreign lands beyond Europe took you even longer. Might you want to deliver a package or letter overnight from New York City to someone in Los Angeles? Sorry. Impossible. You could neither listen to radio, the first commercial radio broadcast occurred in 1920, nor watch television. You could, however, afford the state-of-the-art phonograph of the era. It wasn't stereo, though, and I feel certain even today's vinyl files would prefer listening to music played off a modern compact disc to listening to music played off a 1916 phonograph record. Obviously, you could not download music. There really wasn't very much in the way of movies for you to watch, even though you could afford to build your own home movie theater. Your telephone was attached to a wall. You could not use it to Skype. Your luxury limo was far more likely to break down while you were being chauffeured about town than it is your car today to break down while you're driving yourself to your yoga class. While broken down and waiting patiently in the back seat for your chauffeur to finish fixing your limo, you could not telephone anyone to inform the person that you'll be late for your meeting. Even when in residence at your Manhattan home, if you had a hankering for some Thai red curry or vindaloo chicken or Vietnamese pho or falafel, you were out of luck. Even in the unlikely event that you even knew of such exquisite dishes, your chef likely had no idea how to prepare them, and New York's restaurant scene had yet to feature such exotic fare. And while you might have had the money in 1916 to afford to supply yourself with a daily bowl full of blueberries at your New York home in January, even for mighty rich you, the expense was likely not worthwhile. Your Wi-Fi connection was painfully slow. Oh, wait, right, it didn't exist. No matter, because you had neither a computer nor access to the internet. My gosh, there weren't even any blogs for you to read. Even the best medical care back then was horrid by today's standards. It was much more painful and much less effective. Remember, young Coolidge. Antibiotics weren't available. Erectile dysfunction? Bipolar disorder? Live with ailments such as these. That was your only option. Yes, if you are a woman or if you are a man, your wife, in either case, your daughter and sister had a much higher chance of dying as a result of giving birth than is the case today. The child herself or himself was much less likely to survive infancy than is the typical American newborn today. Dental care wasn't any better. Your money didn't buy you a toothbrush with vibrating bristles. You could, however, afford the very finest dentures. Despite your vanity, you couldn't have purchased contact lenses, reliable hair restoration, or modern safe breast augmentation. And forget about liposuction to vacuum away the results of your having dined on far too many cream sauce-covered terrapin. Birth control was primitive. It was less reliable and far more disruptive of pleasure than are many of the inexpensive and widely available birth control methods of today. Of course, you adore your precious, weshous little Rover, but your riches probably could not buy for Rover veterinary care of the sort that is routine in every burg throughout the land today. You were completely cut off from the cultural richness that globalization has spawned over the past century. There was no American-inspired, British-generated rock and roll played on electric guitars. And no reggae. Jazz was still a toddler, with only a few recordings of it. You could afford to buy the finest Swiss watches and clocks, but even they couldn't keep time as accurately as does a cheap Timex today. Not to mention the accuracy of the time kept by your smartphone. Honestly, I wouldn't be remotely tempted to quit the 2016 me so I could be a $1 billion richer me in 2016. This fact means that by 1916 standards, I am today more than a billionaire. It means, at least given my preferences, I am today materially richer than was John D. Rockefeller in 1916. And if, as I think is true, my preferences here are not unusual, then nearly every middle-class American today is richer than was America's richest man a mere 100 years ago. An absolutely fantastic piece by Donald Boudreau, not John D. Rockefeller, but about Mr. Rockefeller. Now, isn't that fascinating? Because you would think, of course, if you just went out and did one of those man on the street questions, if you could say, if you could go back 100 years ago, live 100 years ago and be a billionaire, would you do it? I think probably quite a few people would say yes. And then, of course, when they consider the fact that if they got a blister on their toe, they'll probably die from an infection, that might change their opinions of things. And we've had incredible advances in medical technology, all sorts of technology that has made us far richer than even the richest person 100 years ago. Just 100 years. Quite a few people on this planet were actually still alive then. Quite a few 100-year-olds exist, and they probably could tell you the same story. Now, normally I would end the podcast there on that topic, but I wanted to share with you, actually, I'm going to switch topics. I don't frequently do this. I try and keep the podcast to one topic only if I can. But I read an article the other day. I went to the Kansas City March for Science. And, you know, you get the usual mix of global warming enthusiasts and pro-science people, but usually you'll find a little mix of pseudoscience in there as well, people who are against vaccines or GMOs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, I found most of the people tend to be pretty moderate. There was a kind of a funny story because there was this kid who was walking around with a sign, the socialist flag, which is a red rose on a red flag, and he was, you know, pushing, you know, democracy and March for Democracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it was just funny because he recognized me, and it turns out he was actually a supporter of mine. Now you may say, oh, he's confused, but you have to kind of understand he's a pro-life Catholic, but he's a socialist, and he liked me in the debates because I'm pro-life as well, and he would have preferred to see me win the nomination. But it sort of made, when I posted the picture of him, my followers were kind of like, well, he's an idiot, he's confused. And it was funny because I posted a picture of him on Twitter, and people started attacking him, and he actually jumped in and started tweeting and retweeting at the people who were attacking him. And he made some pretty funny comments and jokes. So you can see that on my timeline from the March for Science that was on this past Saturday. So this would have been the 22nd. If you want to see it, my Twitter account is AP4Liberty. That's AP, the number 4, Liberty. You can check it out. I think his name was like Brendan Davidson or something like that. But somebody shared an article that I wanted to share with you, and I thought it was brilliant. It was the 13 most ridiculous predictions made on Earth Day 1970. You're going to love this. And Saturday is Earth Day. It's an annual event. It was first launched in 1970. The inaugural festivities predicted death, destruction, and disease unless we did exactly as progressives commanded. You know, it used to be the sort of religious fundamentalist zealots that would preach the end of the world, right? And now that's mostly been, they've taken a back seat to the sort of gloom and doom, end of the world prophecies that we get from the progressive left. And, you know, it's understandable why people behave in such a way, because selling fear gives you power. When you tell someone to fear something, they tend to take you seriously, because without fear, you know, mankind would have never evolved to where we are today. Fear can be a rational. There are rational reasons to be afraid. But when people take advantage of others' tendency to have normal fears, that is when you have the hallmark of a demagogue, or you have the hallmark of an authoritarian, because essentially what someone is doing is playing on your natural fears in order to get you to behave a certain way, or to get power, or to have you give them power. Because if I can sell you on fear, some sort of fear, and get you to buy into fear, well, then I can control you. I can get you to buy my water filters, or I can get you to, you know, to donate money to save the whales, right? It works in both sides of the extremes of left and right. On the right, you've got the insane ranting conspiracy theorists who are telling you that interdimensional child molesters are going to kill, are trying to, you know, dingoes ate your baby kind of crazy stuff. And then on the left, you've got the crazy psycho, we're all going to die in 10 years if we don't stop global warming. But I thought it was interesting because here are 13 predictions made on Earth Day around 1970. The first one: civilization will end within 15 or 30 years unless immediate action is taken against problems facing mankind, said Harvard biologist George Wald. Number two, we are in an environmental crisis which threatens the survival of this nation and of the world as a suitable place of human habitation, said Washington University biologist Barry Commoner. Number three, man must stop pollution and conserve his resources, not merely to enhance existence, but to save the race from intolerable deterioration and possible extinction, said a New York Times editorial. Number four, population will inevitably and completely outstrip whatever small increases in food supplies we make. The death rate will increase until at least 100 to 200 million people per year will be starving to death during the next 10 years, said Stanford University biologist Paul Ehrlich. And please give that guy a grant, right? But please give me a grant. Please give me a grant. We're all going to die unless you give me a grant. Number five, most of the people who are going to die in the greatest cataclysm in the history of man have already been born, by 1975. Some experts feel that food shortages will have escalated the present level of world hunger and starvation into famines of unbelievable proportions. Other experts, more optimistic, think the ultimate food-population collision will not occur until the decade of the 1980s, said Paul Ehrlich again. Number 6, it is already too late to avoid mass starvation, said Dennis Hayes, chief organizer for Earth Day. Number 7, demographers agree almost unanimously on the following grim timetable. By 1975, widespread famines will begin in India. These will spread by 1990 to include all of India, Pakistan, China, and the Near East, Africa. By the year 2000, or conceivably sooner, South and Central America will exist under famine conditions. By the year 2000, 30 years from now, the entire world, with the exception of Western Europe, North America, and Australia, will be in famine, said North Texas State University professor Peter Gunter. Number 8. In a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching Earth by one half, said Life magazine. Number 9. At the present rate of nitrogen buildup, it's only a matter of time before light will be filtered out of the atmosphere, and none of our land will be usable, said ecologist Kenneth Watt. Number 10. Air pollution is certainly going to take hundreds of thousands of lives in the next few years alone, Paul Ehrlich again. Number 11, by the year 2000, if present trends continue, we will be using up crude oil at such a rate that there won't be any more crude oil. You'll drive up to the pump and say, fill her up, buddy, and he'll say, I'm very sorry, there isn't any, said ecologist Kenneth Watt. Number 12, one theory assumes that the Earth's cloud cover will continue to thicken as more dust, fumes, and water vapor are belched into the atmosphere by industrial smokestacks and jet planes. Screened from the sun's heat, the planet will cool, water vapor will fall and freeze, and a new ice age will be born, said Newsweek magazine. And finally, number 13, the world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990, but 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age, says Kenneth Watt. Ooh, bloody fingers, boogity boogity boo. Like, are you scared yet, ladies and gentlemen? Just beware the climate change freaks and the right wing, freaks. Beware the people who sell you fear on a daily basis. Beware the people whose sole industry is to terrify the absolute crap out of you. And yesterday we were having a discussion in the Freedom Ninja Army group on Facebook about this. We were talking about, people, we were talking about the libertarian movement, right? About the people who are the sort of demagogues and the fearmongers of the libertarian movement and how we need to get away from that. Because the truth is that fear sells bigly. You know what I'm saying? It sells big. It sells huge. Fear sells. But it, in my opinion, it leads to rot. But education doesn't sell quite as well. But it's the kind of investment that will pay off dividends in the future. So I hope you found this podcast educational today. And if you did and would like to share it with your friends, do me a favor. If you're listening to this right now live on Facebook, just click the share button, share it with your friends. Have a wonderful week, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll see you soon.